So today we're reading from the 10th canto, chapter 88, text 6 through 8. So we'll read the first two together, and then we'll do responsively 8, verse 8. In every teshwashwanidashu. We'll just say those together. You can just say it with me until we get to 8, okay? Raja Yushma Pitamaha Shrinam Bhagavato Dharmam Aprichchadi Natsutam. Translation by Prabhupada's disciples. Your grandfather came Yudhisthira after completing his ashwamedha sacrifices, asked Lord Achyuta this very same question while hearing the Lord's explanation of religious principles. Text 7. Sa aha balavam tasma pitta shushu shave prabhu nirnam nesha shataya yavatino yudakule. Translation, this question pleased Sri Krishna, the king's lord and master who had descended into the family of Yadu for the purpose of bestowing the highest good on all men. The Lord replied as follows as the king eagerly listened. And this one we'll do responsibly. Shiva Devani Vacha Yasya Hanani Gurmani Harishetad Dhanamshanai Tatodhanam Chajam Chasya Swajana Dukha Dukitam Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Yasya Hanani Grimani Harishetad Dhanamshanai Tatodhanam Chajantyasya Swajana Dukha Dukitam. Yasya Hamani Grinnami Harishe Tadhanam Shanai Tatodhanam Chajantyasya Swajanam Dukadukitam. Yasya Hamani Grinnami Harishe Tadhanam Shanai Tatodhanam Chajantyasya Swajana Dukha Dukitam. Shri Bhagavani Vacha Yasya Namani Grimani Harasya Tadhanam Jana Tatodhanam Chajantyasya Swajana Dukha Dukitam. Ladies, anyone? Yasya Mani Grimani Harise Tadhanam Shanai Tatodhanam Shajantyasya Swajana Dukha Dukitam. Okay, students? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Yasya Namani Grihani Harishe Tadhanam Shanai Tatodhanam Chajantyasya Swajanam Dukha Dukitam. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Shihamanagrihani Harishetatanam Shanai Tutodhanam Shajantyatya Swajana Dukadukitam Shri Bhagavani Vatsha Yasya Namuni Grihani Harishetatanam Shanai Tutodhanam Shajantyatya Swajana Dukadukitam Shri Bhagavani Vatsha Yasya Namuni Grihani Harishe Tadhanam Shanai Tutodhanam Shajantyasya Swajanam Dukadukitam Shri Bhagavani Vatsha.
The personality of Godhead said,
Yasya,
whom,
Aham,
I,
Anugrinami,
favor,
Harishya,
I will take away,
Tat,
his,
Dhanam,
wealth,
Shanai,
gradually,
Tata,
then,
Adhanam,
poor,
Chajanti,
abandon,
Asya,
his,
Swajana,
relatives and friends,
Dukadukitam,
who suffers one distress after another.
Translation. The personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. When the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him, in this way he suffers one distress after another. I say, you say, the personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So, it explains that this question was asked by Maharaj Parikshit to Sukadeva Goswami at Namashana. And again, Yudhisthira is asking this question to Krishna. Krishna is very pleased that he's asking this question. Devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as consequences in material work, but as incidental effects of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. This is an amazing purport. It's really, really something because, you know, devotees often say, oh, you know, that's your karma. Maybe you've just gone through something terrible and they might say, oh, that's your karma. But according to this purport, it's not really like that. So this is very, very special purport. I mean, all the purports of Srila Prabhupada are very special, but this one's really significant. Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, his definitive treatise on the process of devotional service, explains how a Vaishnava is relieved of all karmic reactions, including those that have not yet begun to manifest, aparabdha, those that are just about to manifest, kuta, and those that are barely manifesting, bija, and those that have manifested fully, prarabdha. As a lotus gradually loses its many petals, so a person who takes shelter of devotional service has all of his karmic reactions destroyed. Prabhupada sometimes explains it like a fan, and the fan is going really fast, and then when you pull the plug, it still goes for a while, but then it slows down. So when we become devotees, it's like the plug has been pulled. And little by little, you know, karmic reactions, like here it's explaining, just as a lotus leaf
a lotus flower loses its petals, your karmic reactions are destroyed. That devotional service to Lord Krishna eradicates, takes away all karmic reactions, is confirmed in this passage of the Gopal Tapani Shruti, Purva 15, Bhaktirasya Bhajanam Tariha Mutrapadi, Narasena Mushmin Mara Kalpanam, Etadeva Naishkarmyam. Devotional service is a process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing the mind upon Him, but becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and the next. What's a material designation? Can someone give me an example of a material designation? Anything you can think of. Because you're not these bodies. So a material designation could be like, you're a man, you're a woman, you're a child, you're old, you're Spanish, you're Indian, you're American. Those are all material designations. Those really have nothing to do with the soul. It results in the dissolution of all karma. While it is certainly true that those who practice devotional service remain in material bodies and apparently material situations for some time, this is simply an expression of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord, who bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. In every stage of devotion, however, the Lord watches over his devotee and sees to the gradual elimination of his karma. Thus, despite the fact that the happiness and distress devotees experience resemble ordinary karmic reactions, they are in fact given by the Lord himself. So it's saying here, it's not just a result of you did something wrong in your last life, and now something bad's happening to you. It says, no, that sometimes Krishna, he puts you in a certain situation, especially tailored for you, to help you come closer to him. As the Bhagavatam 10:87:40 states, Bhavaduta Shubha Shubhayo, a mature devotee recognizes the superficially good and bad conditions he encounters as signs of the direct guidance of his ever well-wishing Lord. He doesn't think, oh gosh, why did this have to happen to me? No fair. It's not like that. He sees it as Krishna's special arrangement. But if the Lord is so compassionate to his devotees, why does he expose them to special suffering? This is answered by an analogy. A very affectionate father takes responsibility of restricting his children's play and making them go to school. He knows that this is a genuine expression of his love for them, even if the children fail to understand. So what would you think if a parent said, oh, you don't have to go to school, and you don't have to homeschool either. You can just do whatever you want. Anybody have a comment on that? What would you think? What would you think about that? Yes. Yeah. You like that idea? Yes. Something's wrong with the parent. Why do you think something's wrong with the parent? And how can that be harmful in the long run as time goes on? How could that be harmful? What? You won't learn anything. So as a child grows up, yes. That is a great example. I love that. Yeah, so it's like the child might think, oh, my parents, great, because I don't have to go to school. I don't have to do anything. I can do whatever I want. I can play. I stay on the computer 24/7. No, what Prabhupada's saying here is this is an example of the love of the parent that he says, no, you need to go to school. Did you get your homework done? What about that project you have done in a week? Is that finished yet? So that's all due to love. So Krishna has love for his devotees in the same way. Similarly, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is mercifully strict with all of his dependents, all of us. Not only with immature devotees struggling to become qualified, even perfect saints like Prahlad, Dhruva, and Yudhisthira were subjected to great tribulations all for their glorification. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Sri Bhishma Dev described to King Yudhisthira his wonder at this. Yachodama sito vaja karapane vikadaya Krishna stri gandivam chappam sirvit Krishna sado vipat Nayasa karichid rajam puman vetti vidhitsitam Yavijignasya yutta vyanti kavayopihi. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion, Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon, Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas, O King? No one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. So we know that the Pandavas, they went through so many difficulties. And King Yudhisthira, and they ended up, because of all the difficulties they went through, and all the help they didn't get from the Kauravas, they ended up going to war, they ended up going into battle. And so many people were killed in that battle, and afterwards, King Yudhisthira, he was very, very despondent. Anyone know what despondent means? He was very despondent, he was very sad, he was very sad, he was very dejected. But he spoke with Bhishma, and Bhishma said, you know, as long as you're following the instructions of the saintly people, and of the Lord and of religious principles, even though things may not be going so well in your life, you know that you do it. You don't have to lament at all, because you know that you're on the right path. So many times things are going to happen in our life that, you know, we don't understand why they're happening. And it may make us very sad, and we may never really know. I remember as a new devotee reading the story about the Brahmin's sons, and how one after another the Brahmin's sons disappeared, and the Brahmin was completely just beside himself, and different personalities came and said, oh, I'll help you, I'll make sure this doesn't happen again, and it happened again, and it happened again, including Arjuna, you know, powerful Arjuna. So so upsetting. And then finally Krishna and Arjuna, they decided to go and, you know, travel the world to find out why this was happening. Finally, they ended up in front of Mahavishnu. And do you know why the Brahmin's sons disappeared one after another? Do you know why that happened? It's amazing. It was just because Mahavishnu wanted to see Krishna. That's why it happened. When I read that, I thought, well, I'm not going to try to figure anything out. If that's what can happen, if all his sons were dying because of that, I'll never be able to figure out anything. And here it's also saying that we can't really always understand the plan of the Lord. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that everything is going on according to Krishna's perfect plan. Everything in the whole material world. And it's such an upsetting place, you know, where people are starving and you know, people, just like last night, I don't know how many of you experienced that the power went off for maybe like 4 or 5 hours. It was so upsetting. What? No water. No lights. We can't turn the air conditioner. We can't turn the fan. It was so terrible. But there's people who go through that every day. They don't have those things. And not only that, they don't have enough food. Like in Venezuela, they're saying that they don't even have, you know, enough milk or bread to eat. So all these things are going on. But somehow Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, this is all according to the Lord's perfect plan. So not always, we're not so easily able to understand. But we do know that Krishna is in charge, and Krishna does have a perfect plan. And someone was sharing the other day that as Srila Prabhupada would go about his different activities, no matter what he was doing, he'd always say, if Krishna desires or Krishna willing. And I know you're going to have to go soon, so I wanted to tell you, share a story. I love this story. It's called Whatever Happens, Happens for the Best. And it's a story about Akbar and Birbal. How many know Akbar and Birbal? Okay, and there are a lot of different comic books. And the way the story went is that Akbar was a Muslim king, and Birbal was a Hindu minister. We did a play, this play at the charter school. I was teaching at the charter school. It was so much fun. Actually, it was Hari who played Birbal, I believe. So anyway, Akbar and Birbal were very close. Birbal gave advice, the Hindu minister, he gave advice to the king. And so one day the king, he was polishing his sword, making it clean, making it sharp, getting ready to go on a hunting trip, and accidentally he cut off the tip of his finger. It hurt so badly. And Birbal was there, and Birbal just calmly said, "Whatever happens, happens for the best." And the king became so irate. He's like, "What are you talking about? That is completely inappropriate. Take this man away. Handcuff him. Put him in jail." So they did. Poor Birbal. Handcuffed, dragged away to jail. But as he was leaving, guess what he said? "Whatever happens, happens for the best." So Akbar thought, "Well, this guy is really crazy. He's really gone." So the next day, he had his sword, he had his finger bandaged, and he decided to go on a hunting trip. So off they went. They were going to, hunt tigers and lions, these predator, really strong animals, and they're riding through the forest. And to hear the fight, Akbar was separated from the rest of the hunting party. And, he looked around, and all of a sudden, he saw all of these aborigine people with their spears, and it looked like they were approaching him. They started to surround him. He's like, no, please, I'm the king. They didn't care. They weren't accepting the terror designations. They were surrounding him, and they took him off his horse, and they started to inspect him. And they said, "We're going to sacrifice you. We have to do a sacrifice. We need a perfect human specimen." And he went, no, I'm the king." They didn't care he was the king. So they tied him up, and they're all around him, and the man came to inspect him. He started with his toes, and looked, does he have all his toes? Look all through his body and make sure everything's perfect, because they had to have a perfect specimen. But when he got to his hand, and they removed the bandage, like, "Oh no, this will never do. Part of his finger's cut off. We can't sacrifice him. Release him. Just let him go. He's not useful to us at all." So Akbar was stunned. He was like, "Oh my gosh, Birbal was right." And he couldn't wait to get back. So he's like, galloping home. Can't wait to get to the prison house. And he goes in to see Birbal, and he pays his obeisances, and he says, "Birbal, I am so sorry. You were completely right." And he related the story, told him what had happened, that he was almost killed, but the fact that he had lost his finger saved his life. And Birbal just smiled, because he had so much faith in Krishna. So Akbar said, "But I just have one question for you, Birbal. How is it? It's not fair that you were put in prison. How was it that you were put in prison? I shouldn't have done that." And Birbal said, "Ah, my dear king, if I had gone with you hunting that day, I would have been with you. And even though you weren't a good specimen, I have everything, all my fingers, toes, and limbs intact. I would have been the sacrifice." So Akbar was like, "Ah, Birbal, you are so wise." So, good example of how we can't always understand Krishna's plan, but oftentimes in the future, they call it hindsight is 20/20. We can look back and see, okay. Or not. We can't always understand still why it happened. All right. Although a Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leaves a subtle residue. the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend toward degradation and increase the danger of falling into hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desires, however, leave no choice after their immediate purpose has been served. So oftentimes we hear that whether you're performing pious activities or impious activities, those activities still bind us to the material world. But when we're performing activities in the mode of transcendental goodness, then we're not bound. Moreover, the Vaishnava who enjoys such reciprocation with the Lord is in no danger of falling down into missions. As Yamaraj, the Lord of Death and the Judge of all departed souls, declares, Shivana Bhakti Bhagavad Guni Nama Deyam Shetaschana Smriti Chachana Ravindam Krishna Yano Namati Yachchir Ekadapi Tanana Yadvanasato Kriti Vishnu Krityam. My dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. That means that none of you, he's not asking for any of you, Yamaraj. He's asking for those who don't do those things, and you all do those things. Send me those who do not perform their duties toward Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals. Bhagavad Gita 6:29. The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the suffering he imposes on them. Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure, just as the stinging ointment applied by a physician cures his patient's infected eye. So, you know, your eye hurts, you got a terrible earache, you don't want to take the medicine, it tastes bad. Or I was talking to my sister last night, she was saying, oh, she had such, you know, a problem with ear infections when she was a child. My uncle was a doctor, so he would come over and give her a shot when she had that. And she hated it, it hurt so much, but it got rid of the ear infection. In addition, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless, and it also increases the eagerness with which devotees call upon the Lord to appear. If the devotees of Lord Vishnu were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this world as Krishna, Ramachandra, Nishringa, and so on. As Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Paritrina sadhinam vimishaya chadiskritam dhamma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. And without the Lord showing himself on earth in his original form of Krishna and in the forms of various incarnations, his faithful servants in this world would have no opportunity to enjoy his Rasa Lila and other pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti here counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for some other reason than to deliver saintly persons from suffering? The learned Acharya responds, yes, my dear brother, this makes good sense. This is a good question, but you're not expert in understanding spiritual moods. Please listen. It's at night that the sunrise becomes attractive. During the hot summer, that cold water gives comfort. And during the cold winter months, that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day. And one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good. Just like on a fast day, you're fasting all day, just like this Friday, Lord Krishna's appearance day, fasting till sunset. So all day long, you're undergoing this austerity of fasting, and you're thinking of food, but you're performing austerity, you're just not eating it. And when it finally comes time for the feast, the food tastes especially good. So, here, this is such an important part. It says, in other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, the Lord arranges for his devotees to go through some suffering. And when he appears in order to deliver them, Their gratitude and transcendental pleasure are boundless. So I was thinking of one example of this with Dhruva. When Dhruva was he was very young, and he goes to sit on his father's lap, King Uttanabhad. And what does his father say? Well, what does his father do? Anybody remember what his father does? His father, he just doesn't encourage him. He doesn't encourage him. And his brother is there, his stepbrother, and he's on the father's lap. But then the stepmother, Saruchi, she says, oh, no, Dhruva, don't go on your father. You can't go on your father's lap. Only my son can go. You can't go because you weren't born from my womb. If you want to sit in your father's lap, maybe next life. You know, you'll have to be reborn in my womb, and then you can sit in your father's lap. So this caused Dhruva so much humiliation, so much disturbance. Explained he was like breathing very heavily. He was going through extensive bodily changes and breathing like a snake. And he goes back to his mother and he says, "Mother, this is what she said, you know, what can I do?" And the mother was helpless. She said, "I'm sorry, Dhruva, but you know, Saruchi is your father's favorite wife. And so there's really nothing I can do." But then she gives Dhruva good advice. She tells him, "Well, you can just pray to the Supreme Lord," which Dhruva starts to do. Now, let's go back. Let's put a rewind on. Let's go back and see if the story had been different. And it could have gone many different ways, but let's say King Uttanapad said, "Okay, Saruchi, that's totally inappropriate. Come on up, Dhruva. You can sit on my lap too," which he really should have done. We shouldn't have let that go. But if he would have done that, there wouldn't have been the whole rest of the story. So Krishna, he made this arrangement for Dhruva, even though it seems so unfair that his stepmother and his own father allowed this to happen. So sometimes things happen that don't seem fair, but Krishna has a special plan, and we often have to have faith, because you know, Dhruva went on to worship the Lord, and the Lord appeared before him. And Dhruva, so many austerities, like he only ate, you know, food every other day, and then he didn't eat any drinking. He didn't eat anything. And then he didn't drink water, and then he stopped drinking water. And finally, Krishna appeared before him. And Dhruva was desiring to have his own planet, but when he saw Krishna, he was like, "Wow, there's nothing else I wanted. I was actually desiring pieces of broken glass, but here I have a jewel before me." So many examples of it, even with Prahlad. When Prahlad's own father tried to kill him in just so many different ways. Can you imagine having a father that's trying to kill you? But Prabhupada explains that not only is this increasing the loving mood of his devotee, but also everyone who's taking part in this and who's watching this situation play out. Even with our own very dear Srila Prabhupada, all the austerities that Prabhupada had to perform in order to come over to the West, and even having his Bhagavad Gita manuscript was stolen. I mean, let's just think, if that was me, I probably would have thought, okay, it must be Krishna's arrangement, I'm not supposed to do this. You know, because I worked so hard and this is what happened, and so I'm done, I'll try something else. But not Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada just continued. So all of Prabhupada's austerities he performed ultimately led him to the greatest glory. And Srila Prabhupada would have been happy if he could have even made one person a devotee of Krishna. But he ended up making thousands and thousands, and continues to make thousands and thousands of people devotees all over the world by everything that he's done. So we have to really appreciate how this works. You know, some people, they like to worship demigods, like Hiranyakashipu, you know, worshiping Lord Brahma. and performing such severe studies that he got what he wanted. You know, he was able, well, he didn't completely get what he wanted, but he thought he got what he wanted, and he gained a lot of mystic power. And other, you know, incidents, even the demon Vikka, who was worshipping Lord Shiva, ended up finally, you know, cutting pieces of his flesh, and finally ready to cut his head right off. Can you imagine? Just decapitating himself. So Lord Shiva appeared, oh, what do you want? And then Lord Shiva gave him a benediction. But we don't pray to Krishna. Well, sometimes we do pray to Krishna, because there's a verse of Kama Sava Kama Vam Moksha Kama Dharajak Tibena Tibena Bajitina. Yeah. And so we may pray to Krishna material desires, but when you pray to demigods to fulfill your material desires, in Bhagavad Gita it says, Antava Tufamitation, Tadavat Yopamitisan, Deva Devi Jayanti, Nupata Yanti Nupi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. One who worships the demigods goes to the planet of the demigods, but one who worships me goes to my supreme planet. So you may worship the demigod, and you may get your material desire fulfilled. Krishna won't give you, fulfill something that he knows is bad for you. We've been in the material world for a lifetime. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say that you've been through the cycle of birth and death 8,400,000 species of life many times. Many, many times. We've been wanting this and wanting that and worshiping this and worshiping that. And finally we have this fabulous opportunity to worship Krishna and to try to accept whatever Krishna gives us, as difficult as it might be, and knowing that it's somehow or other it's in our best interest. And there's the other very, very famous verse that exemplifies this. You can say it with me if you know it, because I know many of you do. It goes, Tate nu kampam shikshamikshanano bhunjana ev tatmam kritam vipakam vidvad vipurvir vididham namaste shiveti yo mukti pare chadayavak. My dear Lord, one who constantly waits for your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him, and who goes on suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, offering your respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is certainly eligible for liberation because it is a rightful claim. And we have even, you know, modern days of devotees who go through such struggle, such austerity. Jayananda's appearance day is coming up this Thursday, so I was thinking of a pastime with Jayananda where, you know, he was so sick with leukemia, and he was in the hospital. He was dying. And some devotees went to visit Jayananda Prabhu, and he was on the floor. He was sleeping on the floor. They were like, Jayananda, what are you doing? Why are you sleeping on the floor? You have such a nice bed. And Jayananda, and then they looked and they saw that Jayananda had put a picture of Srila Prabhupada on the bed. And he said, it's the only nice thing that I have here is my bed. So I wanted to offer it to Srila Prabhupada. I thought I would sleep on the floor. So this is amazing. That even, you know, he could think, well, wow, you know, I've done so much service and, you know, I've gone through so many stages before me as Rathi Atras, now I have leukemia, now I'm dying. But no. He had so much faith in Srila Prabhupada, so much faith in Krishna, that he gave everything. He gave everything he could think of right up until the very end. So we have all these great examples to follow. And we see within our own community so many devotees who are going through trials and tribulations, but they don't stop their sadhana. They don't stop their chanting of Hare Krishna. So we know when we see devotees who are going through those kinds of things that they're on their way back home, back to Godhead, like it says in the verse, they're eligible for liberation because it is their rightful claim. So it's time to stop here. If anybody has a reflection, an example, a question. Yes, Ragatmika. Prabhu. Thank you. Is it working?
Can I do a one short week on life analogy to show how when a devotee undergoes distress or some suffering, it's not a karmic reaction to sinful activity. She said, like you, if you throw a ball against a wall, it'll return to you with the same velocity. The wall, something like that. So that's action and reaction in the material world. But for a devotee, it's like throwing the ball, the Krishna touches that ball, and he throws it back. Tailor-made, custom-designed for your purification.
Wow, very nice. Thank you, Paramahansa. Thank you, Rigatmi Kit. And it was another example that Srila Prabhupada gives too, of the mother cat and the kittens, how, and the mice. So when the cat, the mother, when the cat picks up the mice, they are terrified because they know what comes next and they get eaten. But for the devotee, it's like the baby kittens. The mother cat picks them up. But she does it with love, so there's no problem with them. So we're the baby kittens, Krishna's the mother cat, and we're being treated with a lot of love and affection by the Lord. Oh, it doesn't work. Okay. Anyway, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.